This is Icon Art Radio. I'm Bill Teepel. I'm here with co-host Alan Cobb. And our guest today is Chris Soth. Chris is a longtime friend, and I first met you probably when you were working in Beauvoir's as a glass painter, as a peon glass painter.
That's
right.
But
today she's one of our preeminent glass artists in town, working at what company are you working at now?
It's Alpha One Art Glass.
Okay, so tell us a little about your history of how you got involved with glass painting, even the history of glass painting in Fairfield, because we have kind of a history of that.
We do. We moved here to Fairfield in 1990, and about a year later, I walked into Beauvoir's studio to talk to Ron Beauvoir about maybe doing a window for our landing. We had this beautiful square window on our landing that I thought needed stained glass, and talked to Ron about that for a few minutes. And as I was leaving, I walked by a big light table where Lynn Durham, a lot of people will know Lynn Durham, the famous Fairfield artist, was glass painting. And it just caught my eye because I've been an artist for a long time and it looked so fascinating. I'd never seen anything like it. And so I stopped and talked to Lynn and she told me what she was doing. And I said, wow, that looks like so much fun. And she said, actually, we are in kind of a crunch. Maybe do you want to help? So I brought a few things into Ron for him to see if I was, I guess good enough to maybe learn how to paint on stained glass. And that's how it began. I worked there for about 8 years, part-time. Lynn had taught herself from books and anything she could find because there's not much information out there about stained glass painting. In fact, there are lots of secrets that the old timers still won't give up until they're on their deathbeds. I know two people like that, in fact.
Is it barely living old timers that have proprietary and they won't give up their secrets?
Yes, that's one of them.
But there's also probably ancient formulas that we know nothing about.
That's exactly right.
Because this goes, we're talking about the Middle Ages, the kind of glass painting that was done, the faces and hands on the figures in the stained glass windows of medieval cathedrals.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. And it's the same techniques we use today. And there are some books out there. But they don't tell you everything about it. They'll tell you materials and what kind of brushes to use and how to fire it, because all this is kiln-fired, and sometimes multiple times. But I do know one artist who promised his former mentor on his mentor's deathbed that he wouldn't reveal any of the secrets until he was leaving this world. So...
That takes some real special timing, doesn't it?
That's what I thought. I know.
Oh, we lost him.
Yeah, that's tradition.
It's all gone.
What a bummer.
Yeah. But actually, I was looking for a particular kind of brush, and I came across a website from a company in England. I think it's called William & Byrne, B-Y-R-N-E. If I'm not mistaken, and they are traditional stained glass painters, and on their website it says if you're a casual hobby artist, this isn't for you. This is traditional kiln-fired stained glass painting techniques, and they have lessons that you can download. They said they believe there's no reason for secrets. They're into it for the teaching, although they're a well-established stained glass studio in England as well. So I have just downloaded that first course, and I'm very excited about learning because
that's cool.
Part of my work is to, sometimes there will be a piece of painted glass that we get in on a window that needs restoring and re-leading, and we always save original glass if we can, even if we have to put a couple lead lines in. But if it's shattered or the paint completely degraded, I'll have to do a replacement. So I have to look at what's there and try to figure out what methods they used and what paints they used. And I just match it as well as I can since I don't know the secrets. But
But with these courses you're taking, you might learn more about the historical uses and all.
Exactly. So I'm very excited about that because I do know there are things that I don't know and I can't figure out.
Yeah.
So.
Is it this pretty much all vitreous enamel that you use?
Yes. You mean with glass?
Transparent, yeah.
Yeah.
So you paint with a fine powder and a vehicle of
Why don't you describe the process?
The paints come in powder form, and most of them contain lead and lots of other heavy metals, so I do have to be careful and wear a respirator. Mm-hmm. But the lead, they've tried some versions, but they can't get the transparency without some of the dangerous chemicals. So there are some that are more dense, more transparent, some that are used for color, some that are used for matting, which is just the brown or black shades that are used for shading. Mm-hmm. And so you can mix that with water. You can mix it with vinegar for tracing. You can mix it with oils to get different effects. So I learned from Lynn Durham as much as I could, and I've learned just from doing and from other people. And but then so you say I'm going to do a face. I with oil-based black lines, I do the outlines and fire that. And then I'll use, say, a brown water base that I spread and brush evenly all over that face. And then...
That's as a powder.
That's... it's a water base, yeah. I mix the powdered paint with water. And so I get a smooth
matte. And then you spread it on very smoothly. Mm-hmm. That's right. Okay.
Right.
But then it dries.
Exactly.
Then you can brush it away.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So instead of putting in shadows, what you're doing is taking out the highlights. Hmm. So you brush out the highlights and then fire that. And what I'm hoping to learn from these courses I've downloaded is some of the secrets of doing more than one thing in one firing, like doing the tracing lines and the matting and that's some of the secrets that I don't know, but I know it's possible. So, yeah.
Yeah, I remember we had some ancient stained glass windows in the chapel in the high school that I went to, and I was always fascinated by the faces because there were some very non-obvious techniques involved in the gradations of transparency and the gradations of texture and stuff and colors blending into other colors, but it wasn't clear how you could do that. Mm-hmm. And these were at least several hundred years old. They weren't, I don't think they were, one of them was medieval. It was a collected window.
But, nice. I never realized how much painting there is in stained glass. I don't think a lot of people do.
No, and in movies and things, they just take random shapes and put black lines up between them. And it sort of stands for stained glass. But when you look at a real stained glass window.
That's right. The borders, lots of borders are painted, and faces and trees and flowers and robes.
Yeah.
So it's very fun.
But you do both historical redos, if there's repair work that needs doing, so you have to match that technique exactly. Mm-hmm. And you also do new designs?
Yes.
Okay. And you've done some designs yourself.
I have. Usually I just get to do what the company needs me to do, which is repairing things, doing restorations, little pieces that are shattered and have to recreate those. But lately I've had some really interesting new works. One is that we finished this summer and it'll be installed this month, I think, in St. Anne's Church in Needles, California. It's a mission church, and above the double front doors, there's a half round window that they wanted to put something in. And so they are half figures with a pretty streaky glass background and half figures, one on either side, one of the Sacred Heart of Christ, and one is the Immaculate Heart of Mary. So that was fun that I got to design those and, you know, get the approval from the priest and go through the whole procedure. And so that was very fun to do. And then I just completed a personal
one.
So
you did everything. You did the design and you selected the glass pieces and
yes.
all everything involved.
Yes, yeah. And I... Alan Johnston is one of the main glass cutters and builders. I don't do any building or any glass cutting or anything there, just the painting. But he has a great eye for color and glass, and so we confer a lot mm-hmm. on things like that. But I just finished it's about 5 feet wide and a couple feet tall, that goes in a house in Phoenix, and the wife's family is... her ancestors are from Kenya, and she loves the Maasai. And so this was a surprise from her husband, actually Robert Bohannon, the owner of the studio. And Diane knows about it now, so it's okay if she hears this. but we kept it a secret for a long time, and it's a landscape. It's an African landscape with a hut on the side and a shield. And then on the right foreground are an African warrior and a woman, a Maasai woman. And it came out just great, and... Robert was hoping she'd cry when she saw it, but she almost did.
Okay.
So, but that was very different, and I usually don't get to do anything like that.
No, most of it is Christian iconography in
right.
this world,
exactly.
in this American world.
Exactly, yeah.
When you do an original design, what medium do you design with?
To give the final rendering to the client, mm-hmm. You know, after you talk to him about colors and designs and everything else that he wants, it's just watercolor. Mm-hmm. If I were better on the computer, it would be easy to do a computer. Mm-hmm. It would be easy to do it that way.
Yeah.
But I don't have any skill there at all. So I just do a sketch and then turn it into a small, you know, 8.5 by 11 or smaller. Mm-hmm. Rendering which you send to the client, and yeah. you get the feedback then and hope.
And then how do you blow that up to full size? Do you use a computer at all or a projector?
No,
it's just
old-fashioned
drawing.
Technique. It's, mm-hmm. I'm working on one now. It's for a Methodist church in Huntsville, Texas. It's a about 5.5 feet square on each side. It's a memorial window to a man's mother, and it's Christ blessing the children. And so we got the approval from him for that design, and now I just made a grid on the big full-size pattern, you know, 5.5 by 5.5, and I'm just starting to lay in the...
So probably the same way it was done back in 1100.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
That sounds kind of nice.
Except some of the original, the old medieval patterns are works of art in themselves. Because
oh, the cartoon.
Mm-hmm, the cartoons, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine aren't.
Well, we don't know.
Well, they may be.
In 200 years from now, they'll
exactly.
be collecting yours.
That's right. That's right.
So you've got, I mean, I feel like you've kind of feel like you found yourself with the stained glass. You seem to be really thriving on doing it.
I really, really love it, and I feel fortunate every day. Even if I'm painting, just putting matting, light matting on a raft of borders for a church that we have to, you know, we have to make their windows fit. So we had borders all the way around, and it's dirty and it's not artistic, but I love it and I feel fortunate even when I'm doing that sort of thing. So, yeah.
So in the modernist period, it seems like the painting thing kind of went out of fashion, isn't
mm-hmm.
that right? So we had
right.
all these shards of glass and pieces of glass and color and mm-hmm. none, well, in even in the churches, they had more modernist imagery,
right.
as I recall. And, mm-hmm. and so the modeling that's coming back with the painting is part of the resurgence, I think,
mm-hmm.
of contemporary realism.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of cool. And so it's nice. You're sort of riding a wave, I think, of interest again. And well, I mean, you're always going to have the jobs of repairing the old
right.
windows, but it seems like now there's more of a demand, I would think, for old style windows that are new designs.
Yes. The company in Arizona, Associated Crafts, who is the main source of my work, they buy windows from churches that are closing. And, you know, unfortunately, lots of churches are closing. And so they will buy them and sell them to other churches. And last year I worked on one, Queen of Peace in Patton, Pennsylvania, where they just had sort of ordinary windows, they felt. And they bought, were able to buy a set of brilliant traditional, it's called, I'll think of it, but anyway, it's a certain style of very traditional, detailed, figurative windows. And from Barrett College in the north suburbs of Chicago, they closed their campus, I guess, and their chapel. So, but we had to make these fit the openings in the windows of Queen of Peace in Pennsylvania. So I painted thousands of borders because they were 12 tall windows with many, many panels. And there was one face of Saint Simon that was shattered and couldn't be saved or repaired in any way. And so I hate to say it, I was real happy that I got the chance to,
I got a chance to do that. Saint
yeah.
Simon.
I had the original there so I could
to look at.
Yeah, for reference. And but even when I was doing those, that multitude of just dirty painting borders, I felt fortunate. It's just very fun. And I learn all the time.
Yeah, I imagine there's a lot of problem solving to be done. First time this situation has come up. And
that's right. What color is that? There's one color that's a little bit reddish-brown that we don't know what it is. Never been able to find it. So we just match as close as we can.
Yeah. Do you do it all by eye? Do you use densitometers or
all by eye.
Technology?
All by eye. Because, you know, you look at the paint in light and it looks a certain color. You look at it, just the surface of it, not looking through it, but at the surface, and it can be a completely different color.
Right.
So.
Dichroic effects.
I guess.
There's a guy in Venice, California. I forget his name. I think he's pretty well known. I used to go by his studio before he was well known, I guess, who does very modern stained glass kinds of things, only it's not stained glass in any sense. But he works exclusively with dichroic filters. And these are filters that reflect one color and transmit a different color, and there's all kinds of variations of them. And when they're hanging and there's light shining on them, you get reflections at one point and you get this, you know, flash of deep indigo or something, and then it turns some more and you see light through it and it's bright gold. And it's unrelated to the color. Of course, it is in some physics domain. It's,
right.
It all makes perfectly good sense. But it's like magical color-changing things, and it always caught
my eye. What kinds of things
does
he do?
In the form of like a mobile sort of like thing floating.
They're mostly hanging things. They some of them are pretty big, and they're and
well,
there
the
are
movement
windows.
Of it would,
and some of them are windows, and they just work differently when the lights are on inside and when the sun is out outside. He's been, I think, kind of a pioneer in. Dichroic glass sculpture. It's all, you know, weird high-tech stuff that you get from industry that has some very specific purpose.
Well, talk just a little bit about the glass, which you work with the traditional glass that's pretty much been made forever and some of the modern versions of it. But what I've been to these wholesale glass places myself, and I just am like in heaven.
I know.
I would go, I would be pulling the sheets out and putting, there's usually a window or somewhere you can look through and see what they look like. And I'd just be tripping on the pieces of glass
Yeah.
In fact, I don't even ever want to cut them up or anything. Each piece is like a Rothko painting.
Yeah. Right.
The closest thing to Rothko is pure stained glass, I think, in terms of the pure purity of color that you're getting. And, but say a little bit, there's antique glass and there's water glass and there's all these different kinds of glass, but it's a huge spectrum of just kinds of glass and the way
that light
comes through them. And
it's
very seductive, and it's an incredible world.
It reminds me of, I think if I were a quilter, I'd probably own, you know, every time I saw fabric, I'd probably have to buy it because it was so. So that's what I feel like you about glass. It's just so appealing and magical. And we did a church in New Boston, Ohio, that we re-letted, and it was abstract. And some of the people in the shop were saying, those are just ugly. That's, you know, just random lines and colors. But when you looked at the glass, there's a company called Blanco. And I don't know much about all the glass companies, but the variations in texture and shade within each piece of glass was so stunning that if you had just used plain red, plain gold, plain, you know, just a cheaper, less interesting glass, it wouldn't have had nearly the life that it did. But when the road crew went there and installed them, even they, who had been saying how unappealing they were really just astounded at how gorgeous they were. And it was not just because of the design, because it was sort of random abstract design, but because the glass itself was so stunning. So, yeah. So we like to use the best glass, but cost is a factor, then,
And then each one is more suited maybe to a certain application.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of the modern glasses that isn't as expensive also has some nice qualities and I think could be used in certain situations.
Exactly.
The antique glass, the stuff with the little bubbles and the lines and stuff just blows my mind. There's such an ancient something about the way it's made and what it is. And it's just
my dad used to have four big drinking glasses that were sort of tapered a little bit, and they had a sailing ship, you know, sandblasted etched into the side. And it was this sort of medium green, really old looking. I mean, I don't know how old they were. They may have been made, probably they were made in the 30s or something, but it was green glass with lots of bubbles and wrinkles and streaks and things. And it looked like these glasses had been around since long before Columbus. You know, you just imagine people drinking their wine out of these things. And of course, they probably weren't for wine. I don't know what they were for. But the glass alone made the thing very special.
Mm-hmm.
And you just knew that that was not a regular thing.
I know.
And I don't know how to get color in any more pure than you get it through glass.
Oh, that's you're working with light. Yeah, it's a light sculpture.
It's like, it makes me want to somehow take Icon into a direction, to have an exhibit or a room or something that's all about how you can have these experiences off of glass, because it's as good as it gets, the experience of these pieces of glass without turned into anything.
In a way, we're getting cheated by computers, because the digital display doesn't have a very good gamut. The range of color is really limited.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be complete. You know, you put a picture of nature on the screen and it looks realistic. And you think, yep, that's all the colors.
Mm-hmm.
But it isn't all the colors by a long shot.
Mm-hmm.
And but we're so used to that we sort of think that, you know, anything that could happen involving color, we were probably seeing it on the screen. And it's just not true. I was talking to someone the other day about the difference between looking at a projected slide and looking at a video or a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And they were sort of acting like there wasn't really any significant difference. And to me, when I look at a movie, even if the image that's being projected isn't moving, I am subliminally aware of the fact that it's flickering. I mean, more than subliminally, because 24 frames per second is just barely enough to get over the flicker fusion rate. But the colors and the shapes and the things, they all have a kind of temporary quality to them. When you're looking at a projected 35 millimeter slide,
that's what it is.
It can't move, and you know it can't move, and it's not flickering. And maybe all these differences are subliminal, but they're still there, and you still experience the cumulative effect mm-hmm. of it all. Mm-hmm. And the difference between two images projected on the same screen with the filament on one projector cooling off and the filament on the other projector warming up simultaneously, that lap dissolve cannot be done on film, and it can't be done on video. And the colors that you get from two projectors projecting, you know, the best emulsion on slide film that was available in the 60s are different from what you get on the screen. It mm-hmm. just, and with stained glass, you're talking about another whole, you know, order of magnitude of subtlety and range and richness. I mean, and plus, you're viewing it you're viewing the sky through it, and the sky's doing its own thing with
color, right.
At the same time. So you have this endless, rich variety of color and color interactions and things mm-hmm. going on. It's quite incredible.
Well, it's just, I just think it's so cool that this tradition still lives and still being done in the really the same technique and style and hands-on way that it's been done for centuries and centuries.
Yeah, and Fairfield has two, I guess, at
well,
least
for
two
some reason, Fairfield has become something of a center of this. Mm-hmm. And some great glass painters have come out of Fairfield.
Wouldn't it be neat if we could do an icon glass show?
Well, I would. I've wanted to do blown glass. But of course, we have to up our insurance about $100,000 to do that to get the good stuff and have very stable supports. And there's like some infrastructure stuff we'll have to deal with.
No but bumping into
I think we, let's all talk, since we're all involved with ICON here in this room, mm-hmm. more about what we could do, even if we had something in the window every now and then, or mm-hmm. or a room or a you know, mm-hmm. just the thing that they do with a rear projection light mm-hmm. or something. Mm-hmm. Let's think about what we can do with glass.
Mm-hmm. I'm good idea.
That would be nifty. And then it's certainly in my direction of Robert Irwin light and scrims and, you know, planes and space and stuff. That would be fun.
You've been listening to ICON Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.